A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
The Athletic put out some percentage chances for 2024 for the NFL. They gave the Texans a 57.2% chance to make the playoffs. They are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th on that list. Now, they are the highest AFC South team, so they're not. That's not saying that they'd be a wild card team, but they are the highest AFC South team. So let's start there. 57.2% chance to make the playoffs. Do you agree with that number?
That seems about right, honestly.
I think so, too, because the schedule's tough. You have a lot of good teams. You do have some question marks on your roster still. Who's your corner two? It's definitely not going to be Steven Nelson, which we'll get to that.
Honestly, we'll get to it later. Steven Nelson, though, he's done this before on social media. Next thing we knew, he was back on the Houston Texans.
I don't know, man. The barking between like him and like going after Sarge and other media members who are typically very soft with players like that, I found odd. But I think 57%, like it's right around there, 60% chance. You have a tough schedule, but your division's not great. If you go 4-2 in your division this year, I think it'll balance out to where you win the AFC South almost for sure.
The big question is, are you better than Indianapolis with Anthony Richardson? And I know we all want to believe that, duh, they are. But those games were very close last year. And I mean, the second one was close to the first one. They blew your doors off. It was early in the year, though. It was week two, so maybe you write that one off. C.J. Stroud was in his just second game. Finally seemed to figure out how to play in the NFL in the second half. Though the Colts will argue now that, well, we weren't really throwing him tough defenses to go up against. Those were garbage time statistics. But that's the one I'm looking for as far as AFC South supremacy. I feel like for whatever reason, maybe it's Shane Steichen, the Colts are going to be tough for the Texans to beat two times. To the point where I'm almost guaranteeing a split between the two next year.
Totally agree.
Just based off of what we saw last year. I mean, the Colts were a fourth down conversion away from potentially sweeping you and eliminating you from playoff contention. And really the only reason that play stopped because they had the first down was because the running back that they threw the ball to on fourth and short was their third string running back. Right. It wasn't Jonathan Taylor, who I guess was hurt, and it wasn't
Zach Moss,
who's now in Cincinnati. So it was weird.
Yeah, I agree with you. Split this year, to me, is what makes the most logical sense, which of course means they'll either sweep them or get swept, since we both think a split is where we're headed. So they have the Chiefs in first, or the best percentage, then followed by the Ravens, followed by the Jets. Don't agree with that. While they should be improved, In the NFC and in the AFC, there are a lot of assumptions being made about Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins both coming off torn Achilles. I'm just like, I have more questions, I think, than most people. Then it's Buffalo, Cincinnati, the Chargers, and Houston. But yeah, I agree with you. About 57% is where they have them, their percentage chance to make the playoffs this coming year, and I would agree with that.
So I think for the Jets, they're helped by the fact that they are playing against the AFC East. But yeah, I mean, NFC West, it's not like the NFC West is the worst division. I feel like the Cardinals are trending up. The Rams are still competitive. 49ers, best team in the NFC. Seahawks, competitive. So yeah, it's bizarre that they have the Jets as being as up there, because to your point, I agree. I think we got to see what Aaron Rodgers is going to be. It's not like his last year in Green Bay was great either.
No, and they have a disaster coach. They tried to replace their offensive coordinator without actually firing him. I can't remember if we talked about that story.
Yeah, I know. It's something that got lost in the shuffle. Right. Nathaniel Hackett is still there. It makes no sense unless you're trying to appease Aaron Rodgers. Robert Saleh is still there. Doesn't strike me as a great head coach. They have talent. There's no denying that the Jets are really good on the defensive side of the football, but you still look at them with a bit of a side eye because of their history.
Yeah.
They're still the Jets. They're still in the midst of the longest playoff drought in the NFL, and I really just wonder about a guy coming off an Achilles injury, as you mentioned. It just feels like a guy who's generally been mobile and good at escaping the pocket and making throws on the run, that's a pretty big issue. And I mean, he was having issues before that Achilles injury happened. Mm-hmm. There were calf issues that were reported on from Jets offseason work. You know, when you get to a certain point where it, all of a sudden it might leave you a different injury. But I mean, Matt Schaub after the Liz Frank injury wasn't the Matt Schaub that he was before the Liz Frank injury, in my opinion.
Yeah, so in this article too, they say they have a surprise non-contenders category where they kind of do blurbs over all these teams, and they do say it's the Houston Texans based on this analytical projection that it gives them. This isn't an opinion.
It says the Texans are what?
Too low.
Okay.
It says as they're like. So they're surprise non-contenders because it says they're a 3.7% chance to win the Super Bowl this year. That seems about right to me, though, I'll be honest. Because I don't know what math they used to make these graphs and to go through these numbers, but they won one playoff game last year, didn't do well against the Ravens in the second half. Their schedule got much tougher. The holes they have to me are glaring, even though most of the team is severely talented. They added so much talent this offseason. I love the all-in approach that they took because of CJ Stroud's contract, but they just haven't done it yet. So I'm not going to say that this team has. Now, for reference here, the Chiefs are the number one team at 11.5% chance to win the Super Bowl. They have the Texans at 3.7, at least coming out of the AFC. I think that's about right. I think the playoff to make the playoffs is too low, and it should be a little bit higher, but it's still pretty on the money.
From 57?
Yeah, from 57. I would probably go like 62%, so like we're talking like small percentage here.
I really think they nailed it. I feel like with all the good teams that they play against this year, that's about right. I know we all want to be optimistic, and we're certainly riding the bandwagon right now as hard as we can, but you know this organization, just like the Jets, has their own history of shortcomings, and yeah, they have to beat real teams this season.
Yeah,
they did not do that last year. We feel like they're going to have a chance against those teams next season, but adding Stephon Diggs, you're suddenly going to be the 2007 Patriots. I don't know about that, and again, maybe that's overstating it, but it does feel like a lot of the energy, the positivity about them because of what they did last year with the first year head coach and the first year quarterback, there needs to be some reality to ground everybody just a bit. I'm not saying like, hey, they're going to miss the playoffs, but I don't think it's a lock that they make the playoffs.
No, I totally agree. What about the Super Bowl percentage they have here? Just under 4% chance. Does that seem about right to you? Win the Super
disrespectful.
Bowl?
Disrespectful.
You think it's disrespectful, Sean? Okay. Look, it's 3%. I feel like that's probably good for just about every team in the league, true. You know? I'm guessing if you put the pie chart out, there's some teams that have a 0% chance. But, yeah, I'd say 3 to 10 for any team in a given year.
There's like if you go through the AFC, there's like six teams that have less than a 1% chance, according to their math, to win the Super Bowl, which is about right. But here's what I find interesting about that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The team that we're talking so positively about as your main competitor, they say the Indianapolis Colts have a 0.5% chance to win the Super Bowl this year.
That's disrespectful.
So we think that they're on the level of at least competing for the division with the Texans, but the Athletic is saying they totally disagree. That's one thing with the Texans this year. Why do people call me that we work with while we're on the air?
Who's calling you?
That actually might be an intern. A potential intern.
Pick up the phone.
Potential intern. Don't like his chances.
Pick up the phone.
I had like three quit out of me before the summer gets here.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I like his chances.
Middle management, Joe. Nazi? Question mark?
Middle management.
Why didn't you pick up the phone, though?
Because I'm not totally sure who it is.
Oh, I think you should have picked it up.
Because it's one of those where I recognize the last name, but I think I recognize the last name, but I don't recognize the first name. So it's like their parents' caller ID.
Okay, how about...
That's where I'm not totally sure.
The next time one of us gets called, we put it on speaker and we tell them that they're on the air. That's legal, right?
If you tell them, yes.
You have to tell them, yes.
As long as we tell them first.
Yes, you have to tell them.
I like that. If someone's interrupting our show, they become part of the show.
All right, fine. Agreed.
Because you don't seem to have that intrusive.
Why not? Let's see how it goes.
Listen, I mean, the only way to change bad behavior is to put someone in an uncomfortable situation.
That's a good point. All right, when we get back, are you team Spencer Arrighetti, team Hunter Brown? How do you want to see the rotation play out as Jose Urquidy is one start away from rejoining the rotation? That's next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Before we do that, I want to tell you about friends at LaBerge, like Charles. We're supposed to be out there this weekend, but everything that happened, we're going to have to reschedule our broadcast. So we'll be out there soon. And look, if you disagree with what we were just talking about with the odds for the Texans to win the Super Bowl, if you think they have a better chance than 3.7% chance, then bet on it. Go to LaBerge, like Charles. 19 betting kiosks, TVs everywhere to watch the games that are going on. Good food there while you're in the sports book. Fun casino as well. All the kind of games you would want. Even inside the sports book, it's one of my favorite things they have. They have blackjack tables, roulette right there inside, so you can bet on a game, watch it, hang out, and then go play some blackjack while you're in there as well. LaBerge Lake Charles is the place for me. It should be the place for you. And when you do, make sure you download the Penn app, the Penn Play app. You can win up to $2,000 in Penn Play cash. Tell them Joe George sent you by.
ESPN 97.5.
Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Paul and Joe inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
It's an intern from last fall asking for a job, not knowing when I'm on the air. So,
well, hey, what happened? Hey, I mean, you could have had him do an on-air job application.
I'll talk to him after the show.
No, I think we should have done that. Now he's out.
Should have asked him about the Texans Super Bowl odds.
You only get one shot, right?
One opportunity.
So he could have seized everything that he ever wanted in one moment.
You're right.
And middle management Joe
turned him down.
Said hell no.
Did you call me a Nazi in the last segment?
No, I said that you're like a Nazi.
Okay. What's the difference?
I still wouldn't love that.
Well, listen. Some people they're just hard on their employees, and I mean, you're talking about the turnover.
That's me, super tough Joe.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I remember one time Joe, he grabbed the megaphone to call one of the interns as an idiot sandwich.
And, yeah.
I stood by. I said nothing because I was scared. I'm kidding, by the way.
Hey, Daywan Donna, welcome back. She just said her Xfinity was reconnected, so she's finally back on the internet. Hopefully everyone wasn't without power too long. You guys, what? You said Friday? Saturday?
Yeah, I was lucky. I got nice and shampooed on Friday, and I came back to power. And I was like, yes, this is amazing. I'm going to go watch Kingdom of Heaven again. Extended edition.
I haven't watched that one yet.
Very good.
Really?
The extended edition, I believe. Yeah,
I watched the extended edition of two of the three Lord of the Rings this weekend.
Oh, those are great.
They are so good.
I rewatch those once a year. Those are awesome.
That's what I'm in the middle of right now. I do the same thing.
The extended is much better than the original. Not to say that the original wasn't good. The original is great. But, I mean, there's some stuff missing, like, spoiler alert, Saruman dying.
Yeah.
Like he just kind of vanishes.
Whoa.
It's something I also do once a year. I watch all the Hobbits and Lord of the Rings in order once a year.
The Hobbits. That is an interesting one.
It's kind of my.
They're bad, but they weren't great.
I feel it's one of those things where if I'm going to do it, I'm going to go all the way.
Yeah, and you're just in the mood for it.
So I'm just going to go all six. Just find time.
And then, I didn't know that was something you could find time for as a father.
I'd spread it out.
Okay.
Well, we have a new routine at our household. Okay, so I put him to sleep. He goes to sleep for about 5 hours, and every single night he wakes up at 2 o'clock in the morning, or like between like 1:15 and 2 a.m. So, and ruins my sleep. So now I just don't sleep until he wakes up. So now I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to watch movies, let him wake up, put him back to sleep, and then that's when I go to bed. So now I have time for movies, and I'm not sleeping much. That's why I have large coffees.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yes. That's
what a life hack.
That's my life hack right now.
You're still going to Starbucks, I see, though. I thought we were going to change that.
I needed to go grocery shopping. I'm out of coffee. I did change it for like 4 days.
Okay, four days.
I didn't buy enough coffee.
So you got back to that amazing Starbucks coffee.
I underestimated how much coffee I needed, so I made a shopping error.
Gotcha.
So Jose Urquidy's one start away from coming back to the Astros. How do you want to handle the rotation here, Paulie?
Well, Hunter Brown, GTFO.
Yeah, see you, dude. go to the bullpen.
Go to the minors. I don't care. I don't want to see Hunter Brown starting anymore. We'll see what they do with him. I think that's the natural step that they would make. But I also want Urquidy to be good to go. I feel like, unlike with Abreu and unlike with Chaz McCormick, there's no one in Urquidy's way because of the Hunter Brown situation. And honestly, with Spencer Arrighetti pitching the way that he's been pitching, you feel pretty good about him.
Mm-hmm.
But I do wonder if it becomes Spencer Arrighetti and not Hunter Brown that ultimately gets pushed to the minors.
Well, So I want Spencer Arrighetti to go back to the minors.
You want him to go back? Okay.
And so Blum and CK were talking about this yesterday. I thought it was interesting. And it's a very... I'm just going to steal it from them.
Do it.
The point of sending Arrighetti back down to the minors is just to keep him stretched out in case when the next injury happens. Where Hunter Brown... I'd rather just move him to the bullpen, and he doesn't have to be stretched out anymore. You can use him in any way you see fit out of the bullpen. He's your long guy in blowouts, whether it's good or bad. But Arrighetti, you want to keep his pitch count up, so that way if Verlander has to miss a start or Javier or someone, you have someone in the minors who's ready to go, to step in, still be able to throw 85, 90 pitches, and just keep it rolling. So it's more about it's the long term of just having that backup plan, and I'd rather that backup plan be Spencer Arrighetti. So in a way, like, I am choosing Arrighetti over Hunter Brown, and Hunter Brown's just going to the bullpen.
Huh. The problem is, though, I mean, to go back to our conversation earlier, Arrighetti's pitching better. I mean, that was a great start that we saw from him, and unfortunately, Brian Abreu makes the stats look not so good. Mm-hmm. But the last two outings we've seen from Arrighetti, it feels like he's getting better, where with Hunter Brown, it feels like he's holding it together. By, I don't know, bubblegum?
Yeah.
Duct tape? Yeah. It's something you're just expecting a bad inning to happen at some point. You don't know when it's coming. And in the bullpen, okay, maybe he'd be better on that front. But I don't know. I look at these two right now, and are you so worried about burning one of your call-up, call-downs with Hunter Brown that you can't send him down?
No, you could send both of them down. Honestly,
I don't want to send both of them down, really.
I don't know, because
yet, at least.
Well, when you get Blanco back, which they're projecting, was it that could be the first game of the Seattle series? I think it is.
That sounds right.
They didn't say exactly when he would make his next start, but I think they said it could be Sunday or Monday. So you have Blanco back. So in theory, Urquidy is coming back right around the same time. And then you get into June, and you have a much more traditional schedule. You have more days off. You're not playing 29 out of 30 days. So I think they leave the six-man rotation behind. So at that point, it's Verlander, it's Fromber, it's Javier, it's Blanco, it's Urquidy. That's your five-man rotation. And then the question is, do you want to keep Hunter Brown and Arrighetti in the bullpen? Or who you like? And that's why I think one of them goes down. One of the things we didn't talk about when it was positive vibes only at the beginning of the show, Taylor Scott. This guy is just – he's been awesome for the Astros.
Yeah, he's been really good.
Seth Martinez has been good. So I think Dubin's gone at this point. I can't even remember the chaos that happened over the weekend.
I hope so.
But it's probably Hunter Brown or Arrighetti stays on the big league roster, and I feel like they'll go with Hunter Brown with his bullpen experience.
You're probably right, but I feel like Hunter Brown has not earned a stay. I feel like we've gotten to that point where if you're telling your team, hey, guys, things are better now, but we're going to reward the guys who are playing well. To send down Arrighetti and keep Hunter Brown up doesn't make sense. Just like calling up Jose Abreu.
Yeah, see, that doesn't make sense. Like, they're not really doing that.
Just like bringing Chaz McCormick up in a rush doesn't really make sense, no matter what the back of the old baseball card is. And that just gets us back to, okay, well, who's really running the show?
Well, Hunter Brown's back of his baseball card ain't good.
No, it's not.
So.
Who's running the show at the major league level? Do Dana Brown and Joe Espada have much of a say in anything, or is this legitimately being done from the ivory tower with the owner, Jim Crane, and Jeff Bagwell, and the other associates, whether they are Reggie Jackson or Craig Biggio or whoever, of the Varsity Jacket Skull and Bone Society?
They're definitely... Dana Brown's definitely not calling the shots.
Now, I don't know
if his decision making would be that different.
He's definitely not calling all the shots.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes it complicated, is that there seems to be some sort of delegation between what – where – like with the Jose Abreu thing, where Dana Brown is not in West Palm Beach, Florida. Jeff Bagwell is. And therefore – or maybe not therefore, but now we're at a spot where Dana Brown is saying that Jose Abreu should be ready to come back to the majors on Friday. And so there's a lot of different – there's a lot of different eyes, a lot of different voices in the room here.
And also, I feel like there might be two different silos here of operations, where they want Dana Brown to focus more on the minors and to do with the Astros what he did with the Braves back in the day. Mm-hmm. Really, I feel more and more by the day that that's what Dana Brown was brought here to do. And it makes sense. But unfortunately, Dana Brown's side job is essentially being...
to be the actual GM?
No.
The mouthpiece. Yeah.
Exactly. He's the press secretary for somebody who is just saying outlandish things or, I don't know, looking senile. We've seen a lot of that in both categories over the last, 8 years. So, that's what we're seeing. He is forced in this situation to be the mouthpiece, and unfortunately, he's not gifted when it comes to... making it seem like everything's fine. He does it in a way where it's just tough to have a lot of confidence in him, and it's unfair to him because he's the one that's being put out there to answer questions about what the guys who are up top of him on the totem pole want.
It reminds me of on Tuesday nights during the fall when they have the college football playoff selection, and then they have one random member of the selection committee who has to, and they do it for the whole year, and they have to sit there and take these questions from Reese Davis and Greg McElroy, where they're like, why is North Carolina number 13 and not number 12? Why is Penn State number 9 and not 11? They have to answer these questions, but they're in such an impossible position because they have to summarize what 12 different people think about ranking these teams and then have it be a consistent message, which is just impossible to have. And that's what it feels like Dana Brown's going through, where there's what he thinks, there's what Espada thinks, there's what Bagwell, Biggio, Jackson, and Crane think. There's all these different people making things happen that have opinions on how this team should be run. But the only guy who talks on a regular basis, I guess other than Espada, but the only guy, the second guy who has who's in theory higher ranking than Espada, is Dana Brown, who has to say all these things at once without ever saying anything.
Especially, and to continue this comparison, when also the reality is that this person speaking for the committee and for the Astros is also not telling the truth. The playoff committee person is never going to go up there and be like, yeah, dude, man, LSU, we're putting them in. Yeah. Texas is getting in because we like ratings and we like money. And
no one wants to see Florida State's third-string quarterback in the playoff.
But you're not going to say that publicly. Just like Dana Brown is never publicly going to say, the only reason why Jose Abreu is on this roster is because Jim Crane's too cheap to cut him. This is the reality, right? Like he's never going to actually say that unless he wants to get fired the next day.
Would he get fired the next day for that?
Oh, yeah.
Or is Jim Crane too cheap to fire him, huh? How cheap is this guy?
Dana Brown's probably not making enough money for that to be a concern.
Yeah, $30 million buyout. I doubt it's that.
Probably not making as much
He's not Jimbo Fisher.
But you guys, a $2 million
That's
buyout.
That's Jose Abreu.
Junior Bronco says says Jeff Bagwell is Littlefinger or Rasputin.
Rasputin did it religiously and by being sort of cultist, and it's crazy that the Tsar's family were hook, line, and sinker for that guy. That Rasputin was really pushing some crazy stuff. He was essentially this 6'4" homeless man with a massive beard.
I thought you were going to say massive something else.
Well, supposedly he liked to get down, so that was another element of Rasputin. That the Romanov family, which was the monarchy of Russia back in the day, they loved that guy. So if you're making Rasputin comparisons, I don't know. I don't think I could go even
What about Littlefinger?
I can compare Joe to Nazis as a middle manager, but that's too far for Jim Crane. I'm just kidding, Joe. Sorry.
What about Littlefinger for Jeff Bagwell?
No, because it's different than Littlefinger, because Littlefinger is this guy who was in the background who just worked his way to the top despite having nothing. Jeff Bagwell was a Hall of Fame baseball player.
He's more like Jamie Lannister, where it's like he's supposed to be the one making things happen, but instead his hand gets chopped off.
He makes all the wrong decisions.
Yeah, he makes the wrong decision, and now his hand's chopped off.
I like that.
Sadly, his hand has not been chopped off. The Bagwell's hands on the roster. They are all over the roster. He's got like five hands on the roster.
That's Paul Gallant. All right, when we get back, what's going on in the NFL? Our 10-minute drill here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Stand, hush.
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant and Joe George. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time.
All right, time for the 10-minute drill here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Dan Snyder, no longer in the NFL, but he's in some trouble again.
So Daniel Snyder is apparently in a legal battle with a movie that is coming out. It's called The Apprentice, and it chronicles the early years of Donald Trump.
Okay.
I guess Daniel Snyder invested money in this film. He saw the film in February and was furious with its negative portrayal of Trump.
Oh.
So now there's back and forth, cease and desist. I was hoping that Daniel Snyder was suing over his inclusion in the movie because he did something else shady.
I
remember when I saw the headline, I was super excited. But yeah, Daniel Snyder back in the public eye again.
Oh, he can just go away forever. He just annoys me. Hey, Rashee Rice is at practice, so apparently he's allowed to still do that.
Okay, so he's at practice. It's smart to show up at practice when your teammate Xavier Worthy's car is stolen so that no one thinks it was you.
God, yeah, good point.
Good alibi.
He's a team player.
Right. I was on the field.
The sad thing is, I mean, I feel a little bit like an a-hole saying, ha, I bet it was Rashee Rice. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But at the same time, with all the stuff that Rashee Rice has been doing, I feel like it's a fair joke. I feel like it's in play. Like, oh, might have been Rashee Rice.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of deserved.
Furious cosplayer.
It's kind of deserved. When you make those kind of decisions, like, you become the butt of the joke.
You should try to learn from your decisions.
Yeah.
He's working on it.
I want to get his lawyer. His lawyer's like, he's always been an upstanding member of the community. And then people did due diligence. Sure. Like, actually.
And it's like, no, you're like, no. You're kind of the worst.
Do you think that he should get the Chiefsaholics lawyer, defense attorney, who did all the,
all
was
the
it rhyming? Oh, no, yeah.
Did all the football puns. References.
Yeah, a bunch of football puns where he's like.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, that guy ruled.
He's on the 1 yard line of freedom.
He'll do the Chiefsaholic documentary.
I think it's going to be like kind of funny to watch. If it's done well, the true crime on Chiefsaholic. I just, if that that lawyer is going to be in it, and that's why.
As a talking
like,
head.
I know he's going to be one of the main subjects that's interviewed, and that's what I'm there for. Like, I'm going to watch it with a pen and paper just to count the football references.
I feel like if they're going to add other people's takes, that would make the documentary a little more entertaining. Somebody else who's been in a lot of legal trouble, but equally controversial, Jackson Mahomes.
Mm.
I feel like that would be a nice person to add in.
Who's the best player on the Chiefs that makes it to the dock?
Harrison Butker, who also has takes, and I would really love to see what he has to say. I think just bring on all the people with the take.
He also has sold-out jerseys, Harrison Butker.
Yeah, he's one of the most popular jerseys in the NFL now.
All the women's jerseys are sold out for Harrison Butker right now through Fanatics. Speaking of Fanatics, they're suing Marvin Harrison.
Junior,
correct.
You don't want to sue Marvin Harrison Sr.
Yeah.
Honestly, even Junior. I wouldn't.
So Marvin Harrison Jr. hasn't signed his NFLPA rookie deal yet, so you can't buy his jersey online. But apparently they had some kind of deal going back to college. So they're saying this is a breach of contract by not also signing this, and they're suing him. Seems like a bold decision to sue one of the young players, but I guess like you want to sell his jersey? That's the whole purpose of this?
Yeah, I don't have a background in jersey law, but I would assume that this is probably pretty cut and dry where he did sign something and now he's backing out of it.
Yeah.
It's weird that he's backing out of it,
I don't get it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious what his side of the story is because I'm sure there'll be... He's going to have somewhat of a good reason to not want to sign this stuff.
How much of a percentage do players make individually for jersey sales of them, too?
That's what I was kind of wondering.
I would imagine it's not much. Like, it's not a percentage thing.
No.
I would imagine that money just goes straight to the NFL and is shared across all those teams. And here's the unfortunate thing for Marvin Harrison Jr. I mean, it's a Cardinals jersey.
But, like,
they're the Cardinals.
In fantasy football culture, his jersey will sell better than I think you would expect.
Okay, it's the Cardinals.
Yeah, it's not great.
Cardinals are loser nothing franchise.
Jeremy Fowler reported the obvious this weekend that Tua and Trevor Lawrence both are looking for $50 million a year contracts. Why?
Apparently Tua has said no to one of those offers as well.
Wow.
I'm stunned that he's even getting that offer. Now, Jared Goff just got that contract extension, and maybe we should be putting him in the same conversation as these two. Goff's at least made it to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, Goff's gone to a Super Bowl and NFC Championship.
Yeah.
Like, what has Tua done? Taking jiu-jitsu classes?
Got hurt a lot.
So you can, like, learn how to roll?
With Tua, the health on top of the fact that he's 12th, 11th, 10th best quarterback in the NFL, puts up gaudy statistics early in the year, but as the year goes along, they start to diminish, and also he's helped by an incredible supporting cast with Tyreek Hill and with Jalen Waddle. Feels like there's a lot working against him. Ultimately, I bet the Dolphins do sign him, though, because all these teams that have the young quarterbacks, I think that they look at themselves in the mirror and say, well, what do we do if we don't have them?
Okay, I understand. Like, I understand why. I get Jacksonville more. There's still hope that Trevor Lawrence will be what he was. I think we're kind of running out of time. I don't get the Tua.
I don't either. I think everyone knows who Tua is now, which is not to say he's a bad quarterback, but do you want to marry yourself to Tua forever?
He's going to lose when it's cold. He has major concussions. He almost retired from football. Like, not every quarterback has to get the next contract. I know that's the way it operates, but at some point, that trend should stop, and it should stop with Tua specifically.
I'd imagine it would be a situation where it's like the old, I think the Alex Smith had a contract like this, yeah. Andy Dalton had a contract where, yes, it's this much guaranteed, but it's like, well, it's actually only mostly in the first 2 years, and then after that, it's kind of year by year, do we want to keep this guy? Because I can see the Dolphins wanting to keep Tua for the next 2 years. But you have to sign him to a 5-year contract worth whatever $300 million. You have to have this crazy number, but then actually they can get out of it after the 2025 season. Like, that's really, I feel like, the deal that he's going to land on, because they don't have like a great option for in the short term. And with Tyreek Hill, I think he's 30. Did he just turn 30 or is he about to turn 30?
He's talked about retirement
after this coming
season.
Yeah, and is this really going to be like a long-term build? Like, I think it's a, hey, let's ride it out for this year. Maybe he can be our Jared Goff this year to take it to a Super Bowl. But long-term, they're not actually interested in being in the Tua business.
The Dolphins aren't the team that's going to be the one that doesn't give the quarterback the contract.
Yeah.
If this was another organization, I could maybe see them saying, you know what, we're going to walk away after a certain number, but Stephen Ross and the Dolphins, they're not well run, and I bet that they will end up giving him the extension, and they'll be stuck with Tua.
I think it'll be a lot longer than 2 years.
I mean, the Giants signed Daniel Jones to a contract.
They did,
like,
you're
the
right.
The bar to get a contract is very low. Yeah.
But I imagine Tua is going to probably get a little bit more guarantees than Daniel Jones, because he's done more than Daniel Jones.
For sure. I mean, like,
he hasn't been bad, but this is the tricky thing. Like, do you want to be with this guy long term? Like, if you're a commitment phobe like me, like, do you want to be married to somebody?
Yeah, no, I'm starting
forever.
Over.
Yeah,
I'd start over.
But that's the problem.
Yeah, I don't think you can start over this year though. With how much they've added to this roster.
No, you don't. Like, they need to treat him like Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Give him a contract, franchise tag him, franchise him again, and then see you later.
I think that's a good way to go about it.
Try to get 2 years out of it.
And you do have Mike McDaniel, and for everyone who believes in Mike McDaniel, you're hoping that combination is going to get the absolute most out of Tua. But also, you have to think to yourself, we have Mike McDaniel. We could theoretically make this work with another quarterback. If Kyle Shanahan can do it with Brock Purdy and Jimmy Garoppolo, why can't Mike McDaniel do this with 100%. Another quarterback who's a little bit lower on the pay scale?
And once member of the worst trade in franchise history, happy retirement to David Johnson.
Duke Johnson and David Johnson gone in one offseason.
What happened to the league I grew up watching? Well, I didn't grow up watching.
What am I going
to
do with
those? I watched in my 20s.
What am I going to do with those Texans jerseys that I have? David Johnson, the Duke Johnson?
The two D Johnsons. Johnsons?
Yeah.
Oh, you missed another one, too, from 2024.
Who?
Which other former Texans running back retired in 2024?
I thought it was Duke Johnson.
And?
There's a third one?
Rexy.
Rex Burkhead.
February 6th, 2024, after not playing in 2023 like David Johnson, retired.
Oh, you know. He's a free agent.
If you don't play for a year, you retired last year. Okay?
The game retired you.
No one's paying you. So, you retired last year, David Johnson and Rex Burkhead, and maybe Duke Johnson, too. What an era. Were they all in the backfield at one time?
I don't think
David
so.
Duke and Rex?
I think the most we got was two out of the three at any.
I don't know.
I think Sean's right. I don't think we ever had more.
So maybe we got two. Duke. We got Duke and Rex together, and then we probably got Rex and David together.
Maybe 2020. Did Duke Johnson play on the Texans 2020?
I don't remember the last.
Classic
time
the pandemic.
Yeah, and that totally forgettable Texans year.
I mean, yeah. All were forgettable.
Well, yeah, especially the 20.
I mean, that one. Well, remember when J.J. Watt apologized to Deshaun Watson?
Oh.
That was after, the last game of the season, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was. Before the world, before they really crumbled. That's, before all the Texans stuff really popped off.
Yeah.
Was the crying on the field to Deshaun. All right, when we get back, what's going on in the NBA? Plus, we got all rookie members or all rookie teams. And there's a member of the Rockets on. That's next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
First, let me tell you about my friends at MyBookie and MyBookie.ag. You can bet on anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.ag. You could do a little gambling on cards, a little blackjack, a little poker, live dealers. They even got roulette. So if you want to get your casino on, you can do it from the comfort of your home without even wearing pants, but you can also bet on the sports. Maybe you're big into the NBA playoffs. It was a fun weekend in the NBA playoffs. That game on Saturday between Dallas and OKC. Wow, what a game that was. Maybe you watched yesterday and saw the Denver Nuggets eliminated after having a 20-point lead in game number 7. So you can bet on the NBA, but I mean, don't we want to ride the hot team in town, your beloved Houston Astros, who are now taking on the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, of California, of the United States of America, of North America, formerly of Pangea, of Earth, of the Milky Way galaxy. They're playing that team, and they're 1.5 run favorites with Framber Valdez coming off a pretty good start on the hill against something named Reed Detmers. They're just 1.5 run favorites. Come on. Feels like every single night is a 1.5 run favorite for one baseball team versus the next. So, I don't know. Hit it heavy. Over-under of 8 in that game. It's mybookie.ag. Promo code BET975. Sign up. You get a deposit bonus. Come back and reload your cash. You get a reload bonus. It's mybookie.ag. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere. Only with mybookie.ag.
ESPN 97.5.
Basketball. Give me.
The final four teams are set in the NBA playoffs. The Pacers will take on the Celtics starting tomorrow night, and the Mavericks and the Timberwolves will play in the Western Conference Finals. The Nuggets get knocked out. Another year in which the defending champion doesn't make it past the second round of the playoffs. Tell you what, though. I like Dallas, Minnesota. It's going to be a fun matchup.
I'm intrigued as to how well defensively Minnesota can play against two guys who can score and handle, and Luka and Kyrie. But, I mean, last night's game was nuts. I wasn't paying that much attention to the early goings of Nuggets Timberwolves because I saw the score. So I had it on the small TV while I was doing some chores around the house. And I looked up all of a sudden. I was like, wait a second. Minnesota's winning? When did that happen?
I know.
And I went back and saw some of the highlights. And really, Anthony Edwards had a rough night offensively. But, God, he was so good in everything other than scoring in that game. And Carl Anthony Towns, man, who is roasted by everybody, that putback dunk that he had to ice the game in the last 2 minutes or so, good for him. The guy's been getting crushed his whole career. Minnesota's real, real good. I do not want to play Minnesota as a Celtics fan, assuming that the Celtics get through the Pacers to the finals.
Yeah, I mean, to hold the defending champs to 14 points in a quarter, and I know the Nuggets held you to under 20 in both the first and the second.
Oh, yeah, it was the 90s basketball score.
14 points?
In every third quarter? Every single one of the Timberwolves' wins, they held the Nuggets under 100 points.
Yeah. Like, they played great defense. Yeah.
We throw this around, normally, ironically, a legacy game for someone. Unironically, a legacy game for Carl Anthony Towns.
Yeah.
You have to put some respect on his name for at least... We'll see how this series goes, but you have to put some respect on this.
There aren't many great moments in Timberwolves history. I mean, there's a reason they were a candidate to leave not that long ago.
I think they showed the one good moment in
20 years ago to the day that they advanced to the Western Conference Finals with Kevin Garnett. I mean, Charles Barkley was even joking on Inside the NBA afterwards, like, yeah, I haven't been to Minnesota in 20 years. Understandable.
Should Kevin Garnett root for the Timberwolves or the Celtics if they play in the finals?
Celtics. He will root for the Timberwolves, I bet, though.
I saw him in Paul Pierce. Maybe we'll find the audio for another day this week. But Paul Pierce was giving a hard time. He's like, dude, you're just going to cheer for whoever wins.
Probably.
That, KG's like, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. He should get a split jersey like A.J. Hawk's girlfriend? A.J. Hawk's
wife.
Like Paul Gallant?
Okay, I wasn't sure. Yeah, I know it was AJ Hawk and Brady Quinn. I always forget who's the girlfriend, who's the sister.
I think it's Brady Quinn's sister is with Hawk.
Okay.
But
like that.
I guess.
Yeah.
So lame.
I mean, it's not lame. It's just a funny situation to find himself in.
He should pick a side.
You know what? No, I as someone who has worn a half Astros, half Mariners t-shirt, I think he should be allowed to do it, even though I would like to claim him as a Celtics fan. The other interesting thing in the Eastern Conference Finals is going to be Larry Bird, who coached with the Indiana Pacers for a very long time, is from Indiana going up against the Celtics. I'm curious as to what Larry Bird's going to root for. So much winning from
so
the
Larry's
Celtics.
So Larry's definitely rooting for Boston. Kevin Garnett also should be rooting for Boston if they play the Timberwolves in the finals.
I don't know that Larry is definitely rooting for Boston.
Really?
Well, he was with the Pacers for a while.
Yeah, but his whole, like, the best parts of his career.
No, I understand that, but he's from Indiana.
And like, what does he have in Indiana besides losing to Michael Jordan?
His home. He's from French Lick.
Yeah. And Kevin Garnett has to root for Boston because Minnesota still hasn't retired his number, I don't think. Which is a joke. I thought this note on here was interesting from you about Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah, I saw a couple of people tweeting about Hakeem Olajuwon after the Nuggets went down yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I think the point was for a lot of Rockets fans out there, there's a fist pump under the table because Jokic is not definitively the best big man ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of deep appreciation for Hakeem Olajuwon here that maybe isn't shared everywhere as far as NBA fan bases go. And I'd be ignorant to say that, hey, I watched a lot of Hakeem Olajuwon. I was, you know, 5 when he was winning those titles with the Houston Rockets. But I saw a lot of people that were like, yeah, like Hakeem's status as GOAT cemented. Now that it was interesting, I mean, what Jokic has done the last couple of years has truly been incredible. And you definitely have to at least talk about him because of what he's done over these last 3 years. But hey, if that's how you feel, that's how you feel. If you think he was better.
Yeah.
I think I saw fans of, like, everyone being like, there we go. Slow your roll there, Jokic. Because it was very fast for Jokic where it goes from...
No one knew who he was.
Yeah, and just like, yeah, he wins MVPs and loses in the first round.
To,
cool.
Like,
to like, yeah, then it becomes like, is he top 10 all time? It's like, there's a lot of
he wins
whoa,
the title,
whoa, whoa.
There's conversations that, like, I don't want to have about Jokic.
Yeah, and I mean... I remember after the 2022 championship where Steph Curry was just then getting into, like, I think he's top 10. How do you argue him not to be top 10? And that was after 4 championships. And then just the idea that it's like, oh, yeah, Jokic, right to the front of the line, sir. So I saw Warriors fans taking a victory lap. I saw, obviously, Timberwolves There were some
Embiid fans taking a victory lap.
That was weird.
No, those people are losers.
They got stomped out like the cockroaches they are. There's some both Warriors. It was both Warriors and LeBron fans in a rare, you know, moment of unity.
Yeah.
Being like, huh, guess it's not that easy to go to a million straight finals after all, because they both famously made a million straight finals.
And then Amen Thompson just made a second team All Rookie team in 2024.
Hell yeah.
There we go.
Congrats, dude.
Should have been first team.
Probably. Maybe not. I don't know.
Should have been the team.
Should have been rookie of the year.
Skyrockets in flight.
Whoop! Yeah. Wemby's pretty good.
Ime Udoka delight. Not that kind of delight. He got in trouble for that.
I'm going to take the Mavericks over the Timberwolves, though.
Mavericks over the Timberwolves. Okay. I think it's the Timberwolves.
I just, there's something. I love this Dallas team. And Luka's going to get a little bit healthier.
What?
Yeah, I know.
What'd you just say?
I love this Dallas team.
Not enough that they won the World Series. Not enough that they're going to make the Stanley Cup final.
Dallas Joe over here.
It's something about Kyrie. I just like...
Anti-Semitic Joe over here.
Wow. No. It doesn't align with what Paul said earlier.
Yeah.
Anti...
You watched the documentary that that Kyrie suggested.
It was a book.
Anti-Round Earth Joe over here.
I just thought Kyrie was very funny after the post game, like after the game yesterday in the post game press conference or the other day.
You're going to root for a Dallas team while hosting a radio show in Houston.
I'm not going to root for them. I'm just going to pick
them. You really like this Dallas team, you said, though.
To win the series. That's it.
Okay.
I hate Dallas. Is that how I'm supposed to say
it? It's not heartfelt.
I don't know. To me, they're irrelevant to me.
I hate Dallas. Like that.
Dallas is irrelevant.
Wolves in four. How about that?
Wolves in four. All right. When we get back. Are the Astros going to finish the month above 500? What say you? 713-780-3776. That's next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.